Okay, guys, listen up. If you bet on sports now that it's legal here in the Philadelphia area and since you're listening to this podcast, you obviously do. The man that can help you make money this football season is a guy I trust with the premium information, John Price of SportsInformationTraders.com. John Price knows the lines better than anyone else in the country, and he specializes in line movement and value. So when you line up with this company, you get the best lines and before the public does. And he can help make up 5 times of your investment in just 90 days. Go to SportsInformationTraders.com right away and learn why John Price is the only sports wagering analyst with a weekly feature in Forbes magazine. You want to win? Put this number in your phone, 866-441-2711. Again, 866-441-2711. Call and ask about the 90-day special. John Price is a proven winner, and he has been among the best for years with documented success in the Las Vegas Super Contest. 866-441-2741. SportsInformationTraders.com. Again, 866-441-2711. SportsInformationTraders.com. Watch football, make money. It's that simple.
Welcome to the NBA Panel with your host, John Witherspoon. The NBA Panel covers the league to keep you up to date with NBA news, movements, and stats. Join us as we discuss the sport that we love, the NBA. And now, here's your host, John Witherspoon.
Yes, welcome to episode 109 of the NBA Panel. I'm your host, John Witherspoon. With the panel members, we'll keep you updated with all things NBA. Today's show is special. We're joined by my favorite team. We're joined by Denver Nuggets reporter TJ McBride. What's going on, TJ?
Not too much, man. Finally happy we can make this conversation happen. This has been in the works for a long time.
Yes, we finally got it together. Like I said, I'm excited, man. We're about to talk some Denver Nuggets basketball without a plug this time because they're going to be the topic of the show. TJ, so what's going on in Denver right now? What's the vibe?
The vibe is a lot better, man. That 4-game losing streak had a lot of guys kind of down in the dumps. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of excitement. But being able to come in and blow out the Atlanta Hawks by 45 points before going out on the road was exactly what this Denver Nuggets team needed to kind of get back on track. Because things were looking bleak there for a minute, but now that they got this win, they're no longer on the losing streak. You can kind of take a step back and be like, they're 10-5. They are now the second best team in the Western Conference, tied with the Portland Trail Blazers. They're top 6 in both offensive and defensive rating, and they're right back on track to where they need to be. This road trip, though, that's going to be the big one. If they can come out and get some wins against quality teams in this 3-game road trip, that's going to put them right back in the conversation for among the elite teams in the Western Conference.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, because they were 8-1, went on that 4-game losing streak. So now they're 9-5, currently sitting second in the West, as you just alluded to. I mean, the West is a beast. I mean, currently, we're right behind the Warriors, which is a good thing. Last year we missed the playoffs by 1 game, and that game in Minnesota still stings, as Will Barton alluded to. Because if we had won a few games earlier in the season and not take a night off here and there and a few injuries, we definitely made the playoffs last year. I know we would have. I know it.
And not just that, you go back to the year before last, they also missed the playoffs by just 1 game that year.
Right.
That's back-to-back seasons in which the team has missed the playoffs by just 1 game. That's why I think you've seen them buy in on defense so much. That's been the biggest surprise of this start of the 2018-19 season, is the fact that they're third in defensive rating right now. And that all comes down to they're just gutting it out. They are finding ways to defend. They are playing with tons of aggression. And it's all because, like you said, that loss to Minnesota stings. The fact that they've missed the playoffs by just 1 game in back-to-back seasons stings. This team may be young, but they're ready for more, and they don't want to just be the up-and-coming team anymore. They want to force themselves into the upper echelon teams in the Western Conference and kind of demand their spot at the table at that point when it comes to getting home court advantage in the playoffs and really setting the tone for how good this team could be for the next 5-6 years.
Definitely. And as long as they stay focused and take it 1 game at a time and not fall into, like, trap games where they play games they expect to win and go out go flat, I believe they're going to be fine. And like I said, with the addition of LeBron in the West, they definitely can't take a night off because that's another playoff spot they may be taking up because the Lakers didn't make the playoffs last year or the last 5 years, in fact. But with LeBron, you know he's coming. They're coming. So that's going to be one spot taken up by somebody else. And that's going to leave a dogfight between, I say, 6 and 9 for that last final playoff spot.
Well, I mean, seeds 3 through 10 last year were within, what, like 4 games of each other by the time the season ended? Maybe 3.5?
Yeah.
I mean, the Nuggets can separate themselves from that pack, and they have to. But if they find themselves in the middle of it, it's going to be very interesting to see how this thing kind of plays out because they cannot miss the playoffs again for a third straight year when they should be making the playoffs. They have to find a way to be able to get back into the postseason. And like you said, teams are getting better. Like Portland didn't do a whole lot to change,
right.
But Memphis is finally healthy. The Clippers know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City is still Oklahoma City. LeBron in L.A. New Orleans is still a monster. They may only be 8-7
yeah.
this year. But, I mean, Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis is too much to contend with for a lot of teams.
Definitely.
And then you have teams like Sacramento who are getting better, and Minnesota is looking good. Even Dallas, they're 6-8, but they've been better than 6-8. I mean, this Western Conference is brutal. All but 4 teams are 500 or better right now in the Western Conference. It has just been a gauntlet, and it's going to be interesting to see where the Nuggets end up at the end of the season.
Yeah, and also you still have the Rockets sitting there with James Harden and CP3. I mean, they're in 11th right now, but it's a long season.
Yep.
Like I said, we can't take any nights off. And the team seems the team. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
San Antonio is still San Antonio, too. Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry, man. San Antonio is still doing their thing, too. I mean, DeMar DeRozan's no slouch, and LaMarcus Aldridge is still doing his thing. Like, they have a good team over there. If they can have any kind of health with their guards, they're
right.
going to be a team that's going to contend for a playoff spot, too. You're looking at, like, 11 teams that should make the playoffs, which means 3 ain't going to make it. And if Denver ends up in that crowd, man, I don't want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Like I said, the Spurs, they have Pop. You can't never count out Pop. and he have DeRozan over there now. So, hey, we'll see. We're going to see how that plays out. The team seems to be responding to Coach Mike Malone, who just got this extension. He's going to his 4th year. Being around the team, how can you see how? What's your take on how they vibe with Mike Malone?
Well, the thing about Michael Malone, and a lot of fans and at least people around the Nuggets were very curious why he got an extension. And I think it's kind of crazy because this dude came in to a 30-win team coming off the Brian Shaw era.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you remember, but their foundation, their culture was nothing. Like, they were crumbling from within at that point.
I remember the Brian Shaw years.
Michael Malone showed up, sets the... Yeah, man, it was rough. And
yes.
Then, you have Michael Malone come in, read you the whole staff, and they reset that culture from the get. Like, there was no more messing around. There was no more of just, you know, guys trying to rap through pregame reports.
Yeah.
And chance of 1, 2, 3
can't come. Yes. Yeah.
The season's going to end. Like, so all of that finally went away, and Michael Malone established this team as one of the best up-and-coming teams in the NBA. And you got to give him credit for being able to get this young core better and better and better every year. Gary Harris has taken drastically big steps every single season.
Yes.
Jamal Murray's improving. Nikola Jokic went from a second-round pick to a offensive savant and arguably a top 20 player in the NBA.
Right.
Like, that is Michael Malone. And not only that, Michael Malone built all of the schematics offensively and defensively around a 23-year-old unathletic center. Like, that takes a lot of balls, man. Like, it's not easy just to allow someone just to run rampant like that when you don't really know what you're going to get in return, but he trusted his guys. And him trusting his guys is what has allowed the Nuggets to become a 46-win team last year. They're 10-5 right now, and they're
right.
storming the gates of the Western Conference. So Michael Malone has been the guy who has set the tone for the Nuggets' rise through the NBA ranks, and he deserved that contract extension. And I'm very, very curious to see, because he turned them into a very good team. Now I want to see, can Michael Malone turn this Nuggets team into a great team? He has the pieces. He has the talent.
Right.
I'm just interested to see if there is enough of an extra level to him as a coach that can get them into one of the best teams in the NBA.
Yeah, over the last 3 years, he's averaged a gain of 7 wins per season. I mean, last year, between last year and 2016,
yep.
there was a six game rise. But the team does respond to him. They do. And that's a big thing going forward. Because they're going to need...
Yeah, they really do.
They're gonna need all the camaraderie that they can get to get through this tough Western, this tough Western Conference. Speaking of Jokic, real quick, I mean,
he's the perfect kind of personality. No, go ahead, shoot.
No, go ahead. How's his personality? Because you're firsthand on with the team. I'd love to know.
Yeah, so his personality really kind of sets the tone for this Nuggets team because they're a very quiet roster. Like, Gary Harris is not a confrontational individual. Jamal Murray is out here screaming and hollering.
Right.
Nikola Jokic, while goofy and funny, is not an in-your-face kind of guy. Either is Paul Millsap. So they need someone who can be kind of that voice and that, I don't know, the aggressor in a mental state. And Michael Malone is that guy. I mean, Queens bred from New York. He's old school in that way. And he's got no problem with confrontation. He's got no problem telling guys what he thinks. And he is really, and the Nuggets have really kind of embodied his personality. Because without Michael Malone, man, it's hard to take a really quiet, you know, just more lead with my actions than my words kind of a locker room to getting to this level. Because normally you need just someone yelling and hollering. And they don't have that right now. And Michael Malone has been that guy. So they've kind of taken on his personality even.
Well, I know one of the guys that was one of the last parts of the George Karl era, Wilson Chandler, just got traded to the Sixers. I believe he was a good locker room presence before he got traded. Is that facts that you know of?
Yeah, I mean, he was a good dude, but he was a quiet guy. He wasn't someone who was hollering and running around in guys' face and challenging people when they need to. Like, that's just not who he is. And he was a great guy. Like, him and Nikola Jokic got along famously.
Right.
Like, those were two of the closest friends on the team. So it's not like he had any detriment to the team when it comes to being, like, a personality within that locker room.
Okay.
Wilson had his own frustrations with the Nuggets organization and coaching staff, which eventually led to him being traded just because, I mean, it was time for both parties to have a fresh start kind of thing.
Right.
Like, things just kind of get stale in the NBA. Like, the Nuggets can be a good team. Wilson Chandler can be a good guy and a good player, and things can still just go a little bit stale sometimes. So it was better for both Wilson and for both the Nuggets to kind of separate because there's too much wing depth on this Nuggets team as it is right now. So allowing Wilson Chandler to go over and play for Philly, an up-and-coming team in the East, and kind of just replant himself and kind of rebuild himself, especially after all the injuries he dealt with in Denver, it's good for both parties. But he wasn't one of those, you know, rah-rah kind of motivators in that locker room, per se.
Right. And there's videos of Mike Malone that went viral of him jumping in on team practices and defensive drills, and that's good to see the coach and the team blending like that. That's a good thing to see.
Well, yeah. People forget that Michael Malone was a point guard that played in college and is like a guy who lives, breathes, eats, sleeps basketball. He is the son of an NBA coach. Like, this guy has been in the gym more so than he has been anywhere else in his life. Like, when you talk about the term basketball lifer, Michael Malone embodies that entirely. So that is who he is. Like, he is at his best when basketball is around him. And that is all that he wants in his life, other than his family, is to be around basketball. So it doesn't surprise me. Like, when those videos came out, it didn't surprise me in the slightest. I had already just assumed in my head that he was one of those coaches getting down in the dirt with his guys and really grinding out. And I love that. I mean, that is what allows a young team to feel connected to their head coach, which is desperately needed for a young team coming up through the ranks of the Western Conference.
Being a fan of Denver Nuggets is like being on a roller coaster. I know firsthand, like I said, this is my favorite team. Over the years, they really haven't been winning. But when they do win, you notice bandwagon fans come out of the woodworks and they question management without really watching the team. Being in Denver, TJ, what's the state of the fans right now?
The fans are starting to buy back in, but honestly, like, I'm probably going to get some people jumping in my DMs for this one, but Denver as a city just has a very big idea of just bandwagon fans. Whenever one of the team is good, everyone jumps on board immediately.
I noticed that.
The Broncos are bad right now, and the Nuggets are good.
Right.
So everybody's watching the Nuggets.
Right.
It was the same way when there was no Broncos being played and the Rockies were playing. If the Rockies were playing the same time as the Broncos and the Broncos were good, there'd be nobody in Coors Field. Like, that is just how this town operates. It's going to be football first, and if football's not working, they're going to find the best team currently playing, they're going to latch onto that team, and they're going to try and get caught up and fast and fast forward kind of time. But at least they're showing up. And this is the thing. When Denver fans do show up,
right,
they're great. Like, I was at the playoff series in 2011, when Ty Lawson had like 21 points in the first quarter against the Lakers in game
yes.
six.
Okay.
Like, they shut down the street in front of Pepsi Center because people were like cheering on top of their cars. And like, it was bedlam for a hot minute there in Denver. So like, there are moments where guys really go wild and there is a big sense of fandom around this Nuggets team. And they have something like 6 sellouts already this year.
Right.
They only had 3 in Michael Malone's first season as head coach. So you can tell that it's starting to build up, but it's not as if Denver has entirely embraced the Nuggets as their team necessarily yet. They're getting there, but they haven't gotten there yet.
That's good. Progress is good. Progress is good. I mean, I had the pleasure of coming to Colorado once. I covered Team USA basketball at the training center down there. I loved it down there. I loved it down there.
Yeah.
I loved it down there. So what's your
It's a nice area, man. And like, what were you saying?
Yeah, it's a good area. It's a good area. I mean, there was our former coach, George Carl, I wanted to touch on him. I mean, he brought us to 9 straight playoff appearances, but it was all basically one and done. Except he went to the conference finals with Carmelo Anthony. We'll get to him in a few minutes. I mean, he finished with, I believe, a 600 win percentage almost over 9 years with the team. But a lot of flack he took was the one and dones. People were like, We need adjustments. I'm like, look, we're in the playoffs I wanted to ride out with him. I'm not gonna lie. I went in to ride out because we were in the playoffs. I believe being in the playoffs is better than not being in the playoffs. Some people look at it like if you miss the playoffs, you can get a draft pick. Draft picks aren't always paying out. You can look at what the Cavs did with Anthony Bennett, see how that worked out. I mean, you never know what you're going to get in the NBA. You never know what you're going to get with a draft pick unless it's like a lock, like a LeBron. You can see it really coming. Or perhaps Zion is now the hot topic right now. But what's your take on George Karl's era?
My take on George Karl's era is that George Karl may be one of the best regular season coaches in NBA history. And that's not an overstatement. Like, he
You're
has
right.
won a lot of games. But his style and his in-game, like the way that he went through as a coach in-game was not going to benefit teams in the playoffs. I don't think it's crazy to say it at this point. And honestly, everything that's come out ever since George Karl has not been coaching the team about how terrible of relationships he had with his players and the fact that he was calling Kenyon Martin out for not having a father and like all of just this ridiculous, like,
crazy,
all this extracurricular crap that he was bringing into the locker room.
Right.
Like, I completely get why you're moving on at that point. I feel better right now with the Nuggets, with Michael Malone,
right,
with how much more room they have to grow as a team than I ever felt with George Karl when it comes to winning a playoff matchup. And that's just the end-all be-all of it for me. Like, yeah, it took 5 years, and it was rough to go through those 5 years of waiting for them to get back.
Right.
But if they get back to the playoffs this year and they win a series, man, people are going to forget George Karl was ever here, because that was the biggest issue. You can't keep losing in the first round over and over and over and over again and expect people to be okay with it. So, like, it took a lot of gall for this Nuggets organization to fire not just George Karl, but also Masai Ujiri and let him go to Toronto. But they've done a very good job of slowly rebuilding this team.
Yeah, Masai Ujiri, I believe, my opinion is he was a big part of the Denver Nuggets playoff pushes after George Karl got release, because he brought over, when Carmelo Anthony got traded, he got that big haul back with Gallinari and Wilson Chandler and Mozgov.
Yeah,
that was a big haul. I give my hats off to Jury to Masai for that, because that did help Denver get to this present that they have now.
Yeah, and it set the table for them to build this team as well with all the draft picks that they got. They were able to finally kind of have an arsenal of assets to kind of really start pushing themselves forward into the future. And that's what you're seeing now. Like, the Nuggets took all of those draft picks that they got from that trade. They went out and hired a scout as a GM, because Tim Connelly was the lead scouting director in New Orleans before he came to be a GM in Denver. And that was a stroke of brilliance. I got to give it up to the Nuggets ownership group. I mean, they knew they needed to build the draft. So they went and found the best draft mind they could find to make decisions. Ooh, sorry about that, to make decisions for them. And he just knocked it out of the park. There were some bad moments. There were some bad draft picks. Like Emmanuel Mudiay did not pan out.
Yes.
The Hickson trade did not work out. Like, there's going to be things that you look at like that. But to get Nikola Jokic, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, and then even beyond that, Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernangómez, Yusef Nurkic, who they traded for, you know, and got Mason Plumlee, who's been great so far this year. Like, those kinds of moves and being able to identify talent within the draft has been it's really what has allowed them to this Nuggets team to prosper the way that they have.
Yeah, Jokic, I believe he's going to be an all-star this year. I mean, his court vision is crazy for his size. I mean, he has a soft touch around the rim. He can hit the mid-range. I mean, his chemistry on the court with everyone. I mean, him and Millsap have a good pick and roll. I mean, him and Gary Harris, him and Jamal Murray. This team has gelled with him. They have.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible not to agree with that. I mean, Nikola Jokic is a transcendent playmaker. That is where I've gotten. Nobody from the center position has ever created and playmaked in this way. So last year, and this might get a little bit overly advanced stats for some people, but in terms of assists per 100 possessions, and the reason you do 100 possessions is that you put every single player on the same playing field and the same number of possessions, Nikola Jokic was second in NBA history with 9.1 assists per 100 possessions as a center. This has never been seen before. This has literally never been, like, when you start taking his point totals, rebound totals, and assist totals over his first 3 years, the only players that match up are like Wilt Chamberlain, Larry Bird, and Russell Westbrook. Like, you don't find players who are able to impact the game in so many ways.
Exactly.
And then you start talking about his scoring. Like, you hit it on the nose. He's an incredible scorer at the rim. Like, he has some of the softest touched around the rim that you will ever see in the NBA. But his mid-range game is phenomenal. He's got jump hooks. He's got floaters. He's got face-up jumpers. He's got turnaround jumpers. He can stretch it all the way out to the three-point line. He can take you off the dribble. He is a legit three-level scorer who can attack you with or without the ball in his hands. And again, that playmaking, I mean, it's unrivaled. Michael Malone said that he is the best playmaking player in all of basketball. Quinn Snyder, when the Jazz came to town, the Jazz head coach, called him the best passer regardless of height in the NBA. Like, people are taking notice of this guy, and it is really special to be able to watch him play. And honestly, a lot of that flash and a lot of that, I don't want to say showboating, but he had a certain flair about him as a passer. It hadn't been around this season yet, but it came back in that Hawks game, man. Throwing behind-the-back passes, fake three-pointer passes,
yeah,
and cutters. Like, he is looking like Magic Johnson out there, and it was great to see that finally come back to his game, because Nikola and the Nuggets are at their best when they're playing with way too much fun, and they're just out there having just the best damn time they can possibly have by just being joyful and playing offensive basketball in that way. So it definitely is pretty incredible to see him play and just to see the flair that he plays with and the effortless ability that he has when he's doing it.
Yeah, Nikola, he's like a walking triple-double. He averages almost a triple-double. Any night he can give you a triple-double.
Yeah.
You can't say that about many players. You can't say that about a lot of players.
It's seriously. I don't know if you know this, actually, but Nikola Jokic has the most triple-doubles of any international player ever already, and he's 23 years old.
And now I'm sure that's going to more than double before his career is over. More than double.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be way more than double, man. He's going to be touching that 100, 150 triple-doubles at the minimum at this point for his career, if he keeps up this pace, at least.
Definitely. And like I said, the Denver Nuggets are a deep team. I mean, we still have Isaiah Thomas ready to come back. He has a chip on his shoulder. He signed that $2 million contract with the Nuggets because of his injury, basically. He played with the Lakers last year, but the year before that, he was still with the Celtics. He said, you got to break out the Brinks truck, talking about this upcoming season, which was last season, but the injury lingered with his hip, and now he's signed with the Nuggets to basically, this is another contract year for him. So when he gets back on the floor, I believe he's going to be a force. What have you seen from him in practice? Or have you seen him shooting around? Yeah, you have, because you went viral, correct?
There was that video of Isaiah Thomas's son messing with Nikola.
Yeah.
I have a video of IT just getting shots up as well. That's funny you bring that up. But, when it comes to Isaiah, he still isn't necessarily practicing with the team yet. He's able to shoot.
Right.
He's still rehabbing that hip. He's still getting stronger, working on his conditioning. But as far as we know, we're still looking at sometime in December as a timetable. They've been unbelievably vague with him because they're taking it very, very, very slow.
Okay.
Isaiah knows that he missed out on that Brinks truck because he pushed his hip too hard.
Right.
He tried to play when he was not healthy, and that is the biggest reason he did not get paid.
Right.
His body was not prepared for NBA basketball. Every team that talked to him knew it was going to be this long until he got back, so no one was going to pay him.
Yeah.
So now Isaiah has to get back to 100% health. He's got to prove himself as a good locker room presence. Then he needs to come out, and he's got to eat up second units for breakfast and just beat people down. That is the only way he's going to get back to getting a contract in the NBA. Because as far as I understand, he did not have a single other offer this offseason other than that you know, $2 million minimum contract from the Nuggets. He's got a lot to prove and a lot to bring himself back out to get that money he was looking for.
Yeah, I wish him luck, because if he comes back being the player he was, that's going to give the Nuggets an explosive player on the second unit. It's going to be scary. It's going to be scary. You can mix him in with Jamal Murray.
Right.
They're going to be fast on the break. That's going to be a fast break you don't want to see coming at you. Crazy.
And even more so than that, man, like Isaiah was like incredible with Al Horford in Boston.
Right.
So on paper, him and Nikola Jokic should just be great in a two-man game. Like Nikola Jokic is the more playmaking version of Al Horford. And so bringing Isaiah Thomas into this offense, which is built around having Nikola Jokic create high percentage looks at the rim or at the three-point line, like that is a match made in heaven. Like it's hard to look at it in any other way. It's just, can Isaiah Thomas be healthy? And if he is healthy, how much of himself, of his former self is he? Is he 70% of his MVP self? Is he 80%? Is he 50%? Torn labrums are no joke. That is what ended up basically sapping all of Wilson Chandler's athletic ability, was that he tore that labrum in his hip. Like, that is one of the most detrimental injuries you can go through when you are an athlete who relies on that athleticism. So we have to just see what kind of Isaiah Thomas the Nuggets are going to get back. Because without that same burst and without that quickness, Isaiah Thomas is a much different player.
Yeah, and he's already undersized. So on the defense, and he's a liability in most instances. But like I said, if he had the speed back, he's definitely going to be a good look for the Denver Nuggets. And yeah, he tried to play through his injury with the Celtics when the sister passed. He played through that. He should have sat out, but hey, he tried to do it, and it didn't work out. But hopefully, with the Denver Nuggets, it'll work out. One player on the team, Paul Millsap, he started out kind of slow. So bad that I saw a couple of reports came out about, is it time to trade him? And as soon as that came out, what happened? He's trying to get his feet under him again. I mean, he's a good vet. He's an all-star, multiple all-star. He was on the show a couple of times. Well, once. I mean, it was good to talk to him. When he was on the show, he said that the team has to, like, as we talked about, they have to overlook those games where they take nights off and focus on the season. What's your take on Paul Millsap?
Paul Millsap is finally finding where he fits within this Nuggets offense. I mean, it's very difficult to go from being the guy in Atlanta for so long, a guy who can put up a 48-point performance in overtime when they need it, and all of a sudden you're the third, fourth, or fifth scoring option on any given night. And Paul knew he was going into it, but it's difficult to find where you fit when you're losing that many touches as a player. So it made sense to me that Paul was going to struggle. I mean, he was coming off an injury, so he wasn't 100% last year. So he never really got his footing with this Nuggets offense last year. And then this season's, that hand injury. And then the season starts, and obviously things are not going very well because he wasn't used to playing with this team. There's only so many, you can go and practice all you want, but it's not the same as getting those in-game reps and really getting a chance to feel everybody out in that game setting. So for me, like, I totally understood that he was going to struggle out the gate. I expected that to happen. And now, you jump ahead 6-7 games. And, Paul Millsap found his footing. Who would have thought? One of the smartest basketball players in the NBA who has been doing this for 13 years, all of a sudden figured out how to fit in. Like, I completely expected to happen. This is really how I envisioned the process going. And now that they have Paul Millsap playing at such a high level, this Nuggets offense has gone back up to a different level again. And he is the reason that this Nuggets defense has been so much better. They're playing a different, new and improved defensive scheme where they're playing way more aggressively up the floor. So Nikola Jokic is hedging out to the three-point line.
Right.
But when you do that, the big can usually slip the screen and is open, which means Paul Millsap has to come from the weak side, tag the roller, then get back out to the guy he's guarding at the three-point line and make multiple efforts defensively on the weak side to make up for the fact that they're going to be playing up the floor more. So the only reason this defense has worked is because Paul Millsap is so smart and so savvy and
right.
just can see three steps ahead defensively to be able to make up for all of these things that are going to be happening when you play aggressive like that. So Paul Millsap, while he wasn't scoring, he has been a phenomenal defender for this Nuggets team, top to bottom. And without him, there's no way they could be a top five defense in the NBA like they are right now.
Yeah, hopefully this all ends up to a good seeding in the playoffs this year. I believe they're going to make the playoffs, just where. Looks like I take it one game at a time. Speaking of playoffs, can't talk about the playoffs without bringing this up. 2012, the Denver Nuggets, 57-25. Second in Northwest. I believe they had a third seed in the NBA playoffs, correct? The third seed,
yeah,
correct?
I believe they were the third seed that year. Yeah, they were.
And then they ran into the Golden State Warriors. I think we're on the same page here. I believe when they beat us, the Denver Nuggets, that launched the Golden State Warriors into this, what is this, dynasty that they're now into. Minus the moves they put together over the last couple years. But when they beat the Denver Nuggets in the 2012 Denver in the playoffs, that launched them. They gave them the confidence, especially Steph Curry, because he killed us. I remember one three he hit in a corner. He shot it, spun around, and walked off before it went in. I was like, we're in trouble. we're in trouble. I remember that so vaguely.
No, you're not
so
wrong.
So vividly,
man.
I'm sorry.
Like, not just that. I remember, no, it's good. I remember Draymond Green shooting like 75% from the field in that series. Like Draymond could not miss from anywhere on the floor. And then that was really like the Klay Thompson emergence. Everybody knew that Steph Curry was a great shooter. That was already known. He had his ankle issues, which is what tempered everyone's expectations. But Klay Thompson was still kind of an under-heralded player. But he went off. Draymond went off. Steph went off. And it's funny, too, because Draymond Green would not have played that many minutes in that series if it wasn't for David Lee getting hurt.
Right.
David Lee was their starting power forward and a guy that they played around.
Right.
And he was hurt. He was out. And I remember talking to a couple other people, and I was like, listen, like I know they're missing David Lee. He was like a 20-point, 10-rebound guy that season. And I was like, I'm worried about Draymond, man. I was a big Michigan State guy, so I was already like, this dude's a dog. Like, this is a guy who is going to get in your head. And if he hits shots and his defense is there, like, he is almost an unbeatable player. And it happened. And they were just – that was the earliest rendition of this dynasty's Golden State Warriors. And it started in that series against Denver.
Yes.
And people forget, Danilo Gallinari, three games before that, tore his ACL
against
the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
Which, you know, ended his season and ended, you know, the greatness that was Danilo Gallinari for so long. And also on top of that, Ty Lawson was dealing with an ankle injury, and Kenneth Faree was dealing with a back injury. The Nuggets were banged up dealing with that team. And man, when Draymond started hitting those shots, there's just no chance to beat that team. And that is exactly what happened back then.
Yeah, but one player that was phenomenal was Andre Miller. I mean, he he was just a floor general. He carried a lot of games that season. Shout out to Andre Miller. I remember watching him.
I will
him.
Never forget that,
I was like, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember that he had that post-up game winner, actually, in that series. It was a game three, I believe it was, when he was just getting down into the block and just beating up whoever he was dealing with. Andre Miller was a force, man. Andre Miller is one of the guys that I wish that everybody within the NBA kind of looked at and more with more of a microscope, because that dude was one of the best point guards ever.
Right.
And he was one of the best facilitating point guards ever. And his name is just not mentioned anymore in that capacity.
Yeah, I remember that year exactly. When they came to Philadelphia, I got tickets and he killed the Sixers. He pulled that game out for the Denver Nuggets. He got out in the post, hitting turnaways, short jumpers, mid range. He was on fire. I forgot his points he put up that game. But he carried Denver Nuggets in that game over the Sixers. It was a pleasure to watch it in person. Crazy. And for his age, he kept his body in such good shape. It's crazy.
Well, it helped, too, that he was so, I mean, he was so unathletic as a player. Like, you're never going to see Andre Miller dunk. I have this theory that players who are just unathletic are going to play forever. Because if you're not just, you know, jumping out of the gym every single time you take off, you're going to end up having a lot of strain on your body. Like, that's why I'm worried about Zion a little bit. Zion is the unquestioned number one pick for me in this draft.
Yes.
But being 285 and having a 42-inch vert,
that's
like,
crazy.
That sounds like a lot of back issues to me. And Andre Miller never had to worry about that kind of stuff because the dude literally couldn't jump. The dude wasn't hitting threes. He would just post you up, be smarter than you, savvier than you, and just go get buckets. And it was awesome to watch, man. I loved watching Andre Miller.
Yeah, speaking on Zion a little bit, yeah, his game is above the rim. I mean, he's 285 and jumping out of the gym. It's crazy. It's just every fast break, you just know, hey, throw it up wherever. He's going to go get it. I mean, and he's working on his overall game. He's just not a dunker. A lot of people want to label him as just a dunker. Like, I want to see him do more than just dunk. Well, I mean, if you watch the game, he does more. His passing vision is crazy. This guy, like you said, he's the number one pick. He's the number one pick.
Anybody who just calls him a dunker has not watched anything other than highlights about him. Like, that is just, that tells me that you have not spent the time watching Zion Williamson play basketball.
Right.
And this is one of the most highly covered high school players ever. Like, there is so much film that you can just type into YouTube and watch if you just spent the damn time to go look at it, because he's great. Like you said, man, he can go up, he can have a sky-high block, take the ball out of the air, dribble the length of the court, and make a two-handed bounce pass with some English on it, full speed in transition.
Crazy.
Like, that is an incredibly talented player. And his first bucket of his career at Duke was a three-pointer. Like, it's not like he doesn't have the form to be able to eventually start hitting threes.
Right.
Like, people are, oh, man. I look at him and I'm like, this is like a Charles Barkley, LeBron James.
Yes,
pick.
Yes.
Who knows if you'll actually get to as good as what they are.
Right.
But in terms of how high his ceiling could be, if he had the work ethic of a LeBron James, then yeah, man, like, I'm in. I'm there. Like, he is incredible, man. And his teammates, RJ Barrett is a freak. RJ Barrett will look like daggers through your soul and just tear out any little bit of pride you have left.
Yes.
Like, that dude is a gamer. And then Cam Reddish.
Yes.
Cam Reddish might go third in the draft. Duke might have picks 1, 2, and 3,
which is crazy. Which is crazy. And it's very possible. It's looking more and more possible. It's crazy. That is crazy.
They're so good. It's not even fair.
Yeah, a lot of people saying they can run the table. If they stay healthy, I believe they can. I mean, hey, you gotta live in the moment. If you got that, you got that wave. Hey, make it happen. You can make history. Make it happen, because no one can guard Zion. He's
after
too big.
What they did to Kentucky, man. Yeah, and like what they did to Kentucky was just not even fair. Like, when you make Kentucky look like Army, like, you got something else that people just don't got. Like, it's different watching them, man.
It's crazy.
Like, my favorite stat is that Marvin Bagley would have the single most points as a freshman in Duke history with like 24, I believe it was.
Right.
In game one, both Zion and RJ Barrett broke that record at the same time. Zion had like 31 and RJ had like 28, and they both broke the record. Like, that's how much talent is on this Duke team. That's all-time Duke basketball history record right there.
That's crazy. And some people label them as the Golden State Warriors of NCAA because of all the weapons that they have. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Man, they ain't wrong right now, man. They, like you said, I would not be surprised if they ran the table. Like, they could absolutely pull that Bob Knight UCLA running the table kind of run. They have the talent to do so.
And the way Coach K coaches, I believe he'll push for it. I mean, he wants the best out of them every night. Every night. And the Nuggets also made a little bit of history.
You're not wrong, man. That dude.
Yeah, he does. He def does. The Nuggets made a little history yesterday, I believe. They hired Sue Bird, 3-time WNBA champion, as part of the basketball operations, which is a good look. I mean, she's about winning. Maybe she'll rub off on her organization. What do you feel about that hiring?
Well, yeah, man. people don't realize that she is probably one of the most winning basketball players that has ever stepped foot on this planet in any capacity.
Yes.
She has like 4 high school titles, 3 college titles. She has 4 titles in the NBA, I believe. Oh, 3 titles in the NBA.
Yeah.
And she has countless other awards from different leagues that she's played in. Like, that girl is the physical embodiment of a flat-out winner. That is what she has done her entire life, is she finds ways to win. And it's such a cool situation, too, because I was the one that originally broke this story that they were talking about even coming together for a deal. And when I was talking to people in and around the organization, they were like, she's not done playing yet. Like, this is just her coming in an internship kind of role,
right,
learning the ins and outs of the NBA, giving her winning expertise to the Nuggets before she goes back to play for the Seattle Storm once
right,
again,
right,
which is such a great situation for both parties involved. And it was cool because the practice that she visited, like, you could see players basically lining up just to get a chance to shake her hand. Like, that is the kind of, you know, levity that she brings about her.
Right.
She is that kind of a winner that every NBA player in that gym was like, oh, that's Sue Bird. Like, damn, like that's the winner right there. That's the GOAT.
Right.
And like Monte Morris was just like as happy as a kid on Christmas morning. Like, people were freaking out. And when you get that kind of an entity, that kind of a personality in
yeah,
there, like, it changes the equation and it gets guys excited. And man, she has a lot that she can teach Jamal Murray too, man. She's one of the best facilitating point guards and floor generals ever.
Definitely.
And giving her to Jamal Murray, and she's not going to be as a coach, but anyone who thinks Sue Bird ain't going to be spending time on a gym floor is crazy. So even though she won't be a coach, I'm sure there's going to be moments where she's in the gym with guys and talking to people and getting in their ear, and having her around could be invaluable, man.
Definitely. That's going to be a good look. And as good as she gets, she brings good vibes to the organization. Every good vibe helps the team prosper and win. Definitely. The Golden State Warriors, they're having some issues right now. And a lot of people are happy because they want to see this this monster break up. But we don't know if they want to break up. I mean, if they win another championship, which would be a three-peat, I don't know if anybody's going anywhere. But over the week, Draymond and Draymond and KD got into it over a last shot because Draymond took the ball from KD and ran down the court and fell. Basically, they didn't get a last shot off. And KD, being the on-court dominant player he is, wanted the ball to the last shot, which I believe he probably would have made it. I mean, he's done it countlessly. Look at the last two previous NBA Finals. 2 dagger threes basically sealed the last 2 championships for the Golden State Warriors. But, I mean, DeMarcus isn't a scrub as he was being basically made up as to be the way that KD was talking to him, because he was winning before he got there. But we all know Kevin Durant is a better player and more clutch player than Draymond. But, I mean, you know, they lost to the Clippers in overtime.
Yeah, my big takeaway.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So my big takeaway from all this ordeal that you're outlining almost has nothing to do with what actually happened on the court or in the locker room. My thing and my take is that this could start fracturing this Golden State Warriors team, because the organization as a whole, the Warriors coaching staff, their front office, and their ownership group, they took KD's side
right,
over Draymond,
right,
flat out. And not only did they pick their side, they publicly outed Draymond for it, suspended him for a game. They could have just rested him. They could have just literally been like, all right, Draymond, here's a $2,000 fine. We're going to arrest you.
Right.
Chill out. Like, we're not dealing with this right now. Just calm down.
Yeah.
Instead, they suspended him, which means he gets fined $120,000
yeah,
because he was suspended for a game, and it's publicly outed to everybody that they are picking Kevin Durant over Draymond.
And
Draymond's been the emotional leader of that team. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been our 7 years.
And to have Draymond as your emotional leader and a guy that you rely on, it's going to start fracturing that team, because he is the guy who has glued everything together to make them so dominant. He provides them with that edge. And now
yeah,
that they aren't sticking with him anymore, that makes me very nervous for this offseason for them.
Yeah, they won a championship in 2015 with him. That was before Kevin Durant got there, because, you know, 2016,
yep,
LeBron James went to work. And beat that 73-9 team. Crazy, crazy. I want to touch on something real quick. We all know Kevin Durant went over to the Golden State Warriors after he got beat by them. Iggy did the same thing to the Denver Nuggets, but I guess because he's not the high-profile player, no one said anything about it. But Iggy did the same thing. That year they beat us. That was their coming out party. Yeah. Iggy went right over there to them. But like I just said, because he's not one of the second best player in the world, no one said anything about it. But he did the same thing. And he's become a good contributor to that team and a good player off the bench, which is crazy.
Well, he's a finals MVP for them. Won a finals MVP trophy. Like, that's what people forget. And, like, people don't forget in Denver. I'll say that. Like,
I ain't forget.
I don't necessarily call him this. Like, this is not my name for him, but he is known as the mole among big-time, long-time Nuggets fans.
I remember that.
He came in here. The Nuggets traded for him. They traded a lot of pieces to get him.
Right.
And then he jetted right after because they got beat by the Warriors. Like, I get why people feel that way. But while the national perspective may not be ripping him like they ripped KD,
right,
Denver fans sure did, man. Denver fans were angry about that one.
I didn't overlook that at all. I remember that vividly. I did not forget. He was Kevin Durant before Kevin Durant. But since Kevin Durant, like I said, is arguably the second best player behind LeBron James, it's a bigger deal. But hey, he did the same thing. Now he might win his third ring, fourth ring. I'm sorry, crazy. It's crazy. I'm sorry. Yeah, third because he went. Yeah, third.
Man. Yeah, it'd be third because if the Warriors win this season, it'll be their fourth championship in five seasons, which basically, like, you're a dynasty if that happens. Like, there's no way to change the definition of what this Warriors team is if they win again this year other than anything but a dynasty. People do not win four championships in 5 years, and honestly, it should have been a six-peat if it wasn't for the fact that LeBron James turned into a superhero and just drug that corpse of a roster to that finals win.
Right.
Like, you know, without that, I mean, man, how are we looking at this Warriors team if they won six straight titles?
And a lot of people say it's because other factors factored in also, because Draymond got hurt. A lot of people said he would have won that game he got hurt, but that's behind now. That's hindsight. But it's possible if he was there, but hey, we don't know. We're here now, so.
Listen, man, don't have any crotch kicks. We could be able to move on pretty quick at that point. That's on Draymond if you ask.
True.
Him. He put himself in that spot.
True. Very true. And LeBron sold it too. Boy, he sold that.
Yes, he did. As LeBron always does, man. He's a winner, and he'll do whatever it takes to be a winner.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, right now Steph is hurt. And right now they need Steph, because without Steph, they're a totally different team. And it's crazy because they still have Durant, they have Klay Thompson, they have Draymond Green. But without Steph, they're a totally different team. A lot of people be like, they have the second best player on the planet in Kevin Durant. But without him, they still lose. It's like they win more with Steph because
they keep playing isolation ball. I don't get it.
Hey, yeah, you're right.
Literally, their offense falls into strict isolation basketball. I do not understand why. That's going to be something interesting. If Kevin Durant leaves, man, I'm going to be looking for that. I'm curious what that's going to look like, because he might just be a guy who, wherever he goes, is going to feel like he's the one,
right,
and that he needs to be the guy, and he's going to pull up for three, off, you know, off of a dribble every single time down the floor. And if that happens, man, he might not be the winner that everyone thinks he is.
We'll see. We definitely want to see. I was talking to him. They want him and Klay in L.A. for next offseason, but I don't know if that's going to happen with either one of them, because Klay keeps saying he wants to stay. He wants a long-term contract, but he's not going to take a pay cut. I mean, they can make it work. I mean, and if Draymond Green leaves, that makes room for DeMarcus Cousins. So they can essentially replace DeMarcus Cousins and put him in Draymond's spot, which would be crazy. If he comes back even 80% of the player he was, talking about DeMarcus Cousins, that's going to be scary. Because you can't double-team him in on the post. You have arguably the best backcourt around him. You can't double-team DeMarcus Cousins if he comes back the player he was.
That Achilles injury, it destroys bigs. The last big to return from an Achilles injury was Elton Brand.
His
career still ended shorter than it should have.
True.
Like, guys don't bounce back from this injury. I don't care who you are, what kind of athletic freak you are. that is just the most brutal injury that a big man can go through.
That's true.
So I got to just wait and see. Like, I'm at the point now where, like, I'm just not putting any stock into Marcus Cousins this year or in years after until I just get a chance to see what he is like on a court, because it's just impossible to tell. We have no idea what he's going to look like if he does bounce back or not.
Very true. That's where it's trying to ease him back around the All-Star break. But that's why I said at least 80% of the player he was. I never said 100% because, like you said, the injury is very devastating. If he can give them 80% of what he was, man, look, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I agree, man.
It's going to be crazy. Carmelo Anthony, once again, he's on the move. We all know he started with the Denver Nuggets. Then he wanted out. We got that big haul. He wanted to go to the New York Knicks. 2011, it happened. Went to OKC for a year. The OK3 experiment didn't work out. Went to the Rockets. 10 games in, they said it didn't work out. I mean, he wasn't just a problem in Houston, though. They have other higher-priced players. CP3 and Harden has been playing up to their potential. I mean, Harden just now had a breakout game, I believe, last night again. But he wasn't a total issue in Houston. I mean, we all know he's an ISO player, but he's still one of the best ISO players in the league. He can still get you, I believe, he can still get you 20 a night on given nights, not every night. But a 10-time All-Star, I mean, I believe my thoughts was, I think he's come back to Denver to finish there. I know we have a lot of young horses there. I mean, going up and down, he might not fit in that way, but he's still good for a couple ISO buckets in the clutch. What do you think about him coming back to Denver? I think it'll be a good look because he started there. Him retiring there would be a good look. That's my opinion on that.
Yeah, it'd be a good look for Melo. And this is the thing. So let me drop. So I mean, I don't know if this news has necessarily been out there before, but there was a point about a year and a half ago in which the Nuggets, at least, like, so when this is when Oklahoma City traded for him from the Knicks, right?
Right.
Melo was willing to waive his no trade clause to come back to Denver. That was 100% true. And he was interested in coming back to Denver and kind of rounding out his career in that way.
Right.
So that was 100% on the table. Like, that was something that both parties looked into doing. It didn't end up working because the, you know, OKC went out of their way to make sure they got him.
Right.
But even when he left OKC, those rumors started to pop back up again. From everything that I have been told from people that I talk to around the league and around the Nuggets, is that the Nuggets have zero interest in bringing Carmelo Anthony to Denver. That is just the end all be all of it right now.
Okay.
I mean, it's just clear to me at this point that he is not going to bring a winning brand of basketball with him. He's not willing to change the way that he plays. And he still is a Hall of Famer. Like, that is not even a question in my mind.
Yeah,
Carmelo Anthony is a Hall of Fame talent, a Hall of Fame player, but he has not changed the way that he plays that is advantageous to winning basketball games in this era of basketball. Flat out. And especially with this Nuggets team, where it's all altruistic and egalitarian type of an offense, you can't bring in a ball stopper like Carmelo Anthony and expect it to work.
Right.
And in addition to that, there's no roster space on this Nuggets team. They're capped out. They got everything's full with this team. You're talking about cutting Isaiah Thomas at that point, or Tyler Lydon, who's on a rookie contract or something like that, to even bring him in. And even then, I mean, do you really want to mess up with the chemistry right now? Because personally, I wouldn't.
Good points. Excellent points. Well, my biggest thing was to bring him back to retire there. I mean, they could still, if he wouldn't go out like that, they could sign him like to a one day or something. He could retire as a Denver Nugget. I mean, it would have been good to see him.
Yeah,
it would have been good to see him in another, make a couple runs. But like you said, solid points, you know. the roster full.
Yeah.
And the salaries at the cap. So that might not work out. But I'm not sure where he can go. I mean, there's talks of the Sixers now, but I mean, right now, he's just joining the team to join the team, basically. I mean, if he wants to win a ring, go to the Golden State Warriors. I mean, sit on the bench. I mean, get a ring. That'd be good. I mean, that'd be crazy.
The one place I would actually like to see him go, the one place I want to see him end up is New Orleans, because New Orleans needs a wing player. They already have Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday, so you have good players around you at that point. And all they need right now is somebody who is a 6'8 kind of player who can play on the wing and can physically match up with bigger players. Because right now, Etuan Moore is playing small forward for them,
right,
which is like Gary Harris starting at small forward for the Nuggets. Like, it's just small. They don't have wing depth. So I do think that it would be interesting if New Orleans reached out to him. And then for pure chaos, like, this is me completely rooting for chaos, I would love to see the Washington Wizards try and grab him.
They need help.
Could you
over
imagine
there.
All those egos in Washington if he went to Washington?
Oh yeah, every
that looks like
every post game conference would be about.
I want to see all the chaos, man.
Yes, every post game conference would be about players taking too many shots. They already got that going on now. With John Wall and Bill.
John Wall and Carmelo Anthony might go to punches at that point, man. Like, there might be fist fights in that locker room at that point. But again, I'd be so here for it. And then the last team is that the one team who was very interested in trying to get him to sign with them when he ended up signing with the Rockets,
right,
which was the Blazers. Portland wanted him badly. They were trying to get him. CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard were on the freaking recruiting trail, man, doing everything they could to get him.
Yeah, they were.
And it didn't work out. So maybe that could be a landing spot for him nowadays.
I mean, if he goes there or to the Pelicans, as you suggested, he'll get his shots up. It'll be him, Lillard, and McCollum. He'll get his shots. He'll get his chances. It'll be a good look. I mean, I wish him the best.
We'll see, though, man.
Yeah, I wish him the best. And LeBron James, you're 16, LeBron James. That's past Bill Russell. I'm sorry, Wilt Chamberlain on the all-time scoring list. Next is Michael Jordan. And we all know the GOAT discussion is about him and Michael Jordan. So once he passes Michael Jordan, which is possibly, let's say, maybe next season, he's like 800 points behind.
It could be this year. I was doing the math. He could do it this year. He should do it this year. Lakers need him to do it this year.
Would it require a long playoff run or a couple of runs in the playoffs or just him averaging like 30 a game?
No, he could average like 22 a game like he's doing. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure right now he's averaging what, like 27 points a game right now?
Yeah.
So, like, if he keeps it, he's averaging 27.6 points a game right now. If he keeps that up, he'll break Michael this year pretty easily. The one thing that I'm interested is, can he get to number one? Can he reach Kareem by the end of his career?
Yeah.
And he needs to average about 25 points a game for 5 more years if he wants to get there. That's about 70 games a year, 25 points a game for about 5 years. You start putting him in that range of 40,000 points.
That's crazy.
It's not crazy. Like, he could actually get there. I don't know, man. When he broke that record for fifth, I started doing the math. And,
right,
I mean, he might be able to reach Karl Malone. He could. But I think that I'm pretty happy saying that he's going to end up most likely third all time.
Yeah, passing Kobe.
Points scored, which
passing
is incredible
Kobe.
For a guy. Yeah, I think he can pass Kobe. And considering how good of a playmaker he was and how unselfish of a player he was, that's incredible. Like, that is mind-blowing that a guy who is this pass-happy and this much of a facilitator is able to get his point total that high.
Crazy, man. I mean, not knocking LeBron. I'm not putting anything past LeBron. But he's not like a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem had a go-to skyhook later in his career. I mean, older LeBron gets, I mean, his physicality is going to fall off. Like, he's going to get slower. His jumping ability is going to go away. I mean, he can depend on his jump shot more like Michael Jordan did. But it's going to be a tough task for him to pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But like I said, I'm not going to put anything past him. We saw what he did in year 15.
Everybody
ridiculous.
Keeps saying that, but this is I know, but this is also like LeBron James leads the NBA in minutes played this year already. LeBron James has never had a serious injury. LeBron
right.
James puts like, what was it, $2 million a year into keeping his body perfect?
Yeah.
For a guy who was seemingly built in a laboratory to play basketball, I'm not putting anything past him, man. I would not be surprised if he was like, you know what? I want the record. I'm done passing. I'm going to average 30 from here on out just to get to 40,000 points in a career.
Crazy.
Like, that's not crazy to me. Like, LeBron can do that if he wanted to. The man had 48 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists the other night or whatever it was.
But
he does that in his sleep, it seems like.
He does it. He turns it on when he wants.
He might be able to do it. Yeah. And he knows when he needs to get guys going, so he goes out of his way to not shoot himself just to get guys in a better rhythm.
Right.
So, like, if he said, screw it, I'm not doing any of that anymore, he could absolutely reach 40,000 points. I'm just not sure if it's in his DNA to do that.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's, if it's within his reach and it's possible, I think he'll do it, but that's a long time away. We'll see. But once he passes Michael Jordan, we all know a lot of people's on Michael Jordan's side as the GOAT. The only real argument they'll have is the rings, because Michael Jordan was 6 for 6 with six finals MVPs, and LeBron, we all know, was 3 and 6. But as I've alluded to a lot of times, if it's about rings, where's Bill Russell in the conversation? 11 titles in 13 years. He's nowhere near in that conversation.
I made every single time.
That's crazy.
Yep. I keep making the same argument, man. If you're going to start talking about rings, six Z's on the end of the rings, like, it's Bill Russell. That's the winner. Like,
hands
we're not
down.
Having this conversation
hands
anymore.
Down.
Like, that's the end all be all done. Yeah. But at the same time, man, like, Michael Jordan did not play anybody like a force of the Golden State Warriors.
Right. That's true.
Like,
very
Michael
true.
Michael Jordan had way better talent around him going
right.
to these finals.
Right.
Like, Scottie Pippen was arguably a top five player in the NBA when he was playing with him.
Very
like,
true.
This is not the same scenario, which is why I hate the rings argument. So for me, man, like, I'm already there. LeBron for me is the GOAT, flat out, full stop, end of the conversation. Like, what? Like, LeBron can impact the game in whatever way he wants. He can
Very
lock
true.
It down on defense. He can be a straight screen and roller rebounder. He can just play make you to death, or he can just score over you, through you, around you, whatever. It does not matter. So for me, there's nobody like LeBron. There probably will never be anybody like LeBron again. He is a one-of-a-kind, you know, individual that was, like I said, built in a laboratory just to play basketball. That is what he – in terms of physical, it is. There's nobody like him that's ever touched this earth as a basketball player.
And it's crazy because he's getting better. He waited until year 15 to play all 82 games. He waited until then, year 15,
yeah.
which is ridiculous,
yeah, he
man.
He couldn't have if he wanted to. Like, he's never had major injuries.
Yeah.
He's just a different breed, man. He is just a different breed.
Crazy, crazy. TJ, the hour went fast, man. We got to do this again, bro. We got to do this again. This hour was
I'm
so fast.
Down to talk, man. I could talk basketball forever.
Yeah, well, Def got to reach back out, man.
Talk about basketball way too much.
This hour went so fast.
I'll be around, man. I will definitely be around.
Definitely. I'll be in touch, man.
I love to hear it. That's
good luck.
It should be.
Good luck to the Denver Nuggets, man. I'll be reaching out to you for some updates. Definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me today, man. Talk to
I'll
you
be
soon.
Around. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
Yeah, definitely. Be safe.
You too. Yes, that's episode 109 of the NBA panel with guest TJ McBride, Denver Nuggets reporter, sideline reporter, writer. Good luck to the Denver Nuggets. I want to thank the listeners for joining me today and listeners that have been listening since day one as we go through this transition as I'm the host and Brian Osley has stepped aside, maybe for the time being. Thanks for joining me. Catch you next week.